Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Shore against Abbott Laboratories. Mr. Maher.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is David Maher. I am here as counsel on behalf of the appellants Gary Shore and the putative consumer class. With me this morning at counsel table is Ben Barnow of Barnow & Associates here in Chicago. The court this morning is presented with a question of first impression. The question is whether or not the district court erred in finding that a monopoly leveraging theory of recovery under Section 2 of the Sherman Act can be applied in the patent context. The first circuit court to address this was the Ninth Circuit in the Kodak 2 decision, discussed at length in the briefs, and as well in the district court.
What do you mean the first court to address it? Monopoly leveraging theories have been around almost since the beginning of the Sherman Act, and they, at least in the last 30 years, have not met with very much success.
What I mean, Your Honor, is that the monopoly leveraging has not been applied.
That the only court anywhere in the federal system in the last 30 years that has given the time of day to this theory is the Ninth Circuit, while everybody else has rejected it.
Again, Your Honor, for clarification, the Ninth Circuit was unique in addressing it in the patent context. The question was the monopoly leveraging theory, as Your Honor well knows, is that a monopolist uses its monopoly power in one market in order to create or enhance a monopoly in a secondary market.
It's economic insanity. It makes no sense. And perhaps the leading exemplar of that is the Second Circuit's Berkey Photo decision from 1980, which concluded that as a matter of both law and economics, there is no such theory under federal antitrust law. Now, why shouldn't we follow Berkey?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I believe that this court and the district court should have followed the Ninth Circuit's well-reasoned opinion in Kodak 2, because, again,
we have the Second Circuit, Federal Circuit, this circuit in Unique, which you don't cite. We should abandon them all in favor of the Ninth.
Your Honor, it's not a question of whether or not you abandon those decisions. The question is, in the context of a patent situation, which those cases do not address, which the Federal Circuit,
but
of course, does in the Xerox case.
Look, if monopoly leveraging is not a good theory, why does it make any difference where the market power comes from? There was no doubt in Berkey against Kodak that Kodak at the time, which made something like 90% of all the photo film in the world in the 70s, had market power.
Respectfully, Your Honor, what it is it is consistent with the cases discussed both in the district court opinion and in the initial brief that talk about the potential for antitrust liability when a patent holder expands beyond the scope of the patent. And that is essentially what's being discussed here. What you have is a patent holder who has a monopoly in one market, that is the patented market, and it is going beyond the scope of that patent to create or enhance a monopoly in a secondary market. So it's entirely consistent with that long line of cases that talk about the limitations on patent monopoly.
I thought the scope of the patent in this case covered both markets anyway.
Your Honor, there are three markets, actually. It covers two of the three markets. The first market is the protease inhibitor market, the PI market, and Norbeer is, in fact, patented as a PI. Then there is a second market, which is the booster market. That is the PI that can boost other PIs. Norbeer is, in fact, patented in that market as well. Currently is the only product in that market. There is the third market, which is the focus of this case, which is the boosted PI market. And Norbeer is not patented in the boosted PI market.
How is that different from the second one you just described?
Because they are individual drugs. You have a pharmaceutical drug that is used in conjunction with a secondary drug.
Isn't that the second market that Norbeer is patented in?
No. In fact, Your Honor, it's patented the use in a lower dose. Again, Norbeer was originally a full-strength PI.
Right. It's patented as a standalone medication.
Correct.
And it's patented for use as a booster.
That's correct. Now, the booster can or cannot be, it's not a component of the boosted PIs. The boosted PIs are full-strength PIs that can be used in conjunction with Norvir, but are not necessarily used in conjunction with Norvir. And so Norvir does not have a patent within that, which it conceded in the district court in California, Northern District of California, in the Doe case. The court there discussed the limitations on the patents for Norvir and said that, again, made it clear that the patents are in the two markets but not in the third market. And that's what made this case very much like the Kodak opinion in the Ninth Circuit, where you had a parts market, which was a patented market, and a secondary market, which was the service market, which involved the parts, but those patents did not extend to the service market. And so you had a patented market and a market beyond the patents. And again, in Kodak, that was the parts and the service. Here, it's the booster and the boosted PIs. So what you have is a question of whether or not the actions of Abbott in this case make it whether they are behaving beyond the scope of the patent. And that is really the core of what's at issue here, that they have a patent in the booster market. They are using that market monopoly power to create or enhance a monopoly in a market that's beyond the scope of those patents.
And how is any of this different from what Kodak was alleged to be doing in the 1970s, the subject of Berkey photo?
Your Honor, I am not at liberty to even make that distinction.
Berkey photo is probably the leading case on claims of monopoly leveraging.
I apologize, Your Honor, but I'm not familiar enough with the Berkey case in order to discuss that, and I do apologize for that. So what you have here is, again, a situation where the Kodak II court and the Xerox court were facing the very same question, and that was the question that was addressed by the district court. The Kodak II court found that when you go beyond the scope of the patent, when you affect a secondary market, that gives rise to potential liability under the antitrust laws. The Xerox court disagreed, and as noted, the district court in this case adopted the Xerox analysis. It is the plaintiff's or appellant's contention that that was error and that this court should follow the Ninth Circuit precedent on that particular issue. That being the case, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Maher.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hurst.
May it please the court. My name is James Hurst, and I represent Abbott Laboratories. The district court's dismissal was actually correct and can be affirmed on any one of three grounds: Abbott's patents, plaintiff's lack of standing, plaintiff's failure to allege market power. But I'll start with the patents because that was the basis for the district court's decision. There is, in fact, as I see it, no dispute that dismissal was appropriate. And here's why I say that. Plaintiffs spend a lot of time discussing whether or not the Federal Circuit or the Ninth Circuit had the right approach to the antitrust immunity provided by a patent. But here, we argued below, and the district court ruled that Abbott prevails as a matter of law, whether you accept the Federal Circuit's approach or the Ninth Circuit's approach, because Abbott's patent cover both putative markets. Certainly, in this court, until this oral argument, there has been no suggestion that Abbott's patents did not cover both putative markets and therefore provides antitrust immunity over both markets.
Is there any difference here between the booster market and the boosted market?
None. But the counsel's distinction is absolutely frivolous, and here's why I say that. We have the two markets that were alleged in the complaint were the market for Norvir itself. That's what they called a booster market. And the whole premise of the complaint was that we had a patent monopoly over this so-called Norvir booster market. And they said we were monopoly leveraging that power, which over a separate market, which they called the boosted PI market. The boosted PI market is nothing more than the combination of Norvir plus another protease inhibitor. Well, the district court ruled that we have a patent monopoly over that second market as well, the boosted PI market. The patents were in the record. It's the 036 patent, the 157 patent. On their face, clear as a bell, they say Abbott has a patent over the combination of Norvir plus another PI. That's the very definition of the boosted PI market. And without any dispute that we have patents over both the Norvir market, so-called Norvir market, and the second boosted PI market, Abbott prevails under either the Federal Circuit's approach or the Ninth Circuit's approach. Because in the Ninth Circuit, the ruling, this monopoly leveraging theory that the Ninth Circuit was ruling upon, was relying upon, was as follows. According to the Ninth Circuit, Kodak had a patent monopoly on parts, copier parts. And they leveraged that monopoly over copier parts to enhance their market position in the copier service market. But the key to the Ninth Circuit's decision was that this separate market, this copier service market, that it was not patented. That was the whole point. You use a patent monopoly to try to gain an advantage in a market that's not covered by a patent. Here, Judge Gettleman ruled, without challenge from the plaintiffs, until now at oral argument, there's no challenge in their briefs, that Abbott's patents cover both markets. And if Abbott's patents cover both markets, and they do, that ends the inquiry, because Abbott prevails as a matter of law whether this court follows the Federal Circuit's approach or the Ninth Circuit's approach. But to the extent there's any reason whatsoever to get into this debate between the Federal Circuit and the Ninth Circuit on the scope of immunity that arises from a patent, the Federal Circuit got it right, and the Ninth Circuit, with all due respect, got it wrong. First, the parties have cited multiple cases, I mean not just Abbott, but also the plaintiffs, that a patent provides antitrust immunity as long as the patentee is operating within the scope of the patent and merely exercising its patent rights. The only exception in the case law to that traditional and settled rule is the Ninth Circuit. What the Ninth Circuit does is create a mere rebuttable presumption that a patent gives a patent owner antitrust immunity. And that doesn't make any logical sense. When a patent is issued...
What do you think the effect of Independent Inc. is on this subject?
I don't actually think Independent Inc. has any impact on this subject, because this is a motion to dismiss. What Independent Inc. ruled was that a patent does not give a presumption of market power. That had been a change from the previous rule where a patent was presumed to create market power. Here, we just accepted, at the motion to dismiss stage, we just accepted the definitions of the market provided by the patentee, and we accepted their argument that we had a monopoly over this so-called Norvir market. And we, having accepted that argument, it makes Independent Inc., I think, not relevant to the current dispute, because that was the tact we took to prevail in a motion to dismiss. Now, with respect to the...
Why doesn't it show that patents are no different from anything else for purposes of market power and application of antitrust principles?
I think it does, Your Honor.
Then it is pertinent to this.
Well, the only reason I say that it's not pertinent, although... It would be pertinent to the case to the extent it went forward, but in the plaintiff's complaint, they said Abbott has an independent monopoly over a product they defined as a one-product market, Norvir. And so rather than challenge that argument with an Independent Inc. type of approach, Your Honor, where we said, look, the patent doesn't mean we have market power, we just accepted it. And we said, you know, even if you're right that there's one market for Norvir as a single standalone, I mean as a one product market, we still win as a matter of law.
I don't think you're getting the point of my question. You know, I understand the case to say that there's just no difference between patents and other sources of market power.
I agree.
And to the extent the plaintiff's theory is that patents are somehow different as a source of market power, right? At least in oral argument, the plaintiffs are saying, well, we lose if the source of market power is anything other than a patent. But patents are different. And I don't see why independent ink doesn't mean patents are no different.
I absolutely agree that independent ink says patents are no different. So to the extent that the premise of this entire lawsuit is that Abbott's Norvir patent means that it has a monopoly over Norvir and the so-called booster market, plaintiffs would lose as a matter of law. Now, with respect to the Ninth Circuit's approach, where they create this rebuttable presumption of a legitimate exercise of patent rights if you impact a second market, it doesn't make any logical sense, because when you get a patent from the patent office, you get the patent on the claimed invention, whatever that invention happens to be, and you're given exclusivity over whatever that invention happens to be. And so if your invention happens to impact one, two, three markets, it makes no difference, because the patent office doesn't look to antitrust markets when it issues a patent. And that's why independent ink actually makes a lot of sense, because there's a complete disconnect between the patented invention and...
I don't care whether it makes a lot of sense. I just care that it was decided by the Supreme Court.
And I guess the Ninth Circuit's approach doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons, including independent ink.
Yeah, for that, we can decide whether it makes a lot of sense. We've got freedom to decide whether to follow the Ninth Circuit, but we don't have any freedom to decide whether to follow the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, if you were to think about following the Ninth Circuit, I mean, this is what it would mean. Tomorrow I invent a water-powered car. Clearly, my patent on that water-powered car could impact multiple markets, the oil and gas industry, the automotive parts industry. But that doesn't mean I don't have antitrust immunity for exercising my exclusivity over the water-powered car. Patents and antitrust markets are complete disconnects.
I just don't understand this immunity stuff. I mean, what you should be saying is that if you invent a water-powered car, it's not only is it not possible for you to get a monopoly over water, you don't want a monopoly over water. You want to drive the price of water down, because that makes your car even more attractive. Right? The plaintiff's theory here seems to be that Abbott is behaving irrationally by driving the price of complements up. That's what monopoly leveraging is. That's why it's an irrational economic theory. That doesn't have anything to do with patents or immunity or anything like that. It's just, the problem is that it's nonsense.
I don't disagree, Your Honor. Judge Gettleman's ruling was, however, that we have patent immunity, and that's what resulted in the dismissal of the case. And it's clear we do have patent monopoly. The only argument to the contrary was this Ninth Circuit case, which doesn't apply here for multiple reasons and, frankly, doesn't make a lot of logical sense. And so, regardless of whether you file a Federal Circuit or the Ninth Circuit on the scope of patent immunity, Abbott would prevail in this case. Additionally, an independent ground for dismissal would be standing. Plaintiffs do not have standing in this case. The only complaint that the plaintiffs have offered with respect to injury that they suffered is that they're paying more for based on a price increase on a patented product, which is far from the type of injury that antitrust laws were designed to prevent. Paying more because a patent owner decides to increase a price is the nature of a patent. It's not an antitrust injury, so that is a separate and independent ground to affirm the dismissal below. If Your Honors have no further questions, I see that my time is running out. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Anything further, Mr. Maher?
Just for clarification, with respect to the Ninth Circuit decision, I don't believe that as counsel has represented, that ruling could be applied here and result in the same ruling by the district court. Because, again, what you have here is a secondary market, patented market scenario. If the mere presence of a patented product in another market expands the patent, then they're correct, but there would be no such thing as a secondary market. That's the point here. In the Kodak case, you had parts which were also part of the service market. So you had patented products which expanded, if you will, or bled over into another market. However, that doesn't mean that the service market is a patented market. And so what you have here is a patented market, which is the booster market. And its mere presence in the boosted market does not necessarily make that a primary patented market. I just wanted to clarify that particular issue. On the question of standing, as counsel just discussed, essentially their argument is that because there's no antitrust liability here, no potential for antitrust liability, we can't have suffered an antitrust injury. Frankly, if this court finds and affirms that, that would be true. If the court finds that this monopoly leveraging theory does not apply in the patent context, then they're correct. However, if this court finds that this theory that has been espoused by the plaintiffs here and was upheld in the Ninth Circuit, then in fact there is an antitrust injury that has been properly pled and the plaintiffs have standing. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The second case this morning is